Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. For the month of January, School Sucks podcast, in addition to being brought to you by the listeners, has also been brought to you by the Foundation for Economic Education. That's FEE. And in the very near future, FEE is going to be hosting three-day seminars across the United States to teach young people the power of economic thinking. Now, maybe you're in college right now and you're saying, I'm not interested in economics. Everyone here who's an economics major is always just talking about this Krugman, and I find him to be dreadful. Well, I have great news. There's a whole other world of economic thinking out there that doesn't result in famines or Krugmans or democide. It's terrific. But in addition to free market principles, these FEE seminars are really about economic thinking that is going to prepare you for a successful future. You'll learn economic principles that can affect your career prospects, your investment decisions, business strategies, and more. So if you're between the ages of 14 and 26, you have an opportunity to join top students, successful business leaders, and great teachers to discover the relationship between personal and social wealth, as well as the virtues of an enterprising life. The total tuition cost for 3 days is only $79. Still don't understand how that's possible. It includes all meals and housing, and there are tuition and travel reimbursements available as well. Apply today at fee.org/students, and please let them know that you heard about these seminars by listening to the Old School Sucks podcast here. Thanks.
Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at @SchoolSucksShow. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username @SchoolSucksPodcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Today is January 25th, 2016. Welcome back to School Sucks 4. Sorry. I'm really excited to welcome Kevin Geary back to the show. Kevin runs two sites that we have discussed in the past on School Sucks, in addition to many other successful entrepreneurial ventures. The first is called Rebooted Body, and the second is Revolutionary Parent. So rebootedbody.com and revolutionaryparent.com. And this was not one of the scheduled shows for SSP Productivity Month, so I'm glad we were able to fit it in, and I really, really value what Kevin has contributed to School Sucks, both as a podcast guest and in our Facebook group over the last year and a half. And I also want to say I'm really impressed with the work that Kevin does and the businesses that he has built. Whether we're talking about health and fitness or parenting, Kevin is helping a lot of people. And because he's had this great success as a lifestyle entrepreneur, I was also very happy to learn that he was pretty willing to reveal many of his secret weapons, and we are going to discuss them in great detail today. Originally, the concept for the show was kind of a day in the life of Kevin. It was going to be more about routines, but we really, really focused down on some very specific tools and strategies that he uses to not only stay organized while managing multiple operations, but also to be very, very productive. So I'm trying to make this quick. It is midnight on a Monday, and it was an amazing day of production. Let me tell you, I went through and I edited this show with Kevin, but this morning I also had a great conversation with Jake DeSillis. The topic was upgrading our habits. And earlier tonight, we also did a roundtable, Nathan Frazier, Drew Sample, Daryl Becker, and myself, on the topic of mastermind groups. You are going to hear both of those shows before the end of the week, because the end of this week is the end of SSP Productivity Month. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the show with Kevin. Please post your questions in the group if you have any. Kevin is frequently present and responsive, so this show could probably generate a bit of discussion. All right, have a great day. Kevin, welcome back to School Sucks.
Hey, thank you for having me, Brett. Glad to be here.
My pleasure. I'll tell the people why you're here today. I think it was about, well, within the last 2 weeks, you messaged me on Facebook and you told me I had to watch a television series called Making a Murderer.
Yes.
And I think I snapped back at you like, how do you have time for that? So from there, said, you know what would be a good idea? If we could do like a day in the life of Kevin. right? Because everyone in my audience, or most of the people in my audience, especially the people in the Facebook group, they know who you are. They know what you do. They've heard our collaborations before. You're a highly productive man. It's quite impressive. I wanted to know what a typical day for you looked like. But then, Kevin, you impressed me even more, where you told me we should do a week in the life, because some days I do nothing. That blew my mind. Right. And I'm trying to make my weekends look more like that when it comes to work, because I realize, you know, being able to kind of unplug and step away for a couple of days is really great. It's refreshing. It helps you reset. Yeah, that's where I wanted to start with you today. A week in the life. Now, first of all, you're a part of SSP Productivity Month. How are you enjoying that so far?
So far, so good. I've listened to pieces here and there. I think the only full episode I listened to was the last one that you put out.
Have you learned anything?
I've heard a lot of great ideas. I think that the process that I'm employing is already, it's working for me, right? So I don't feel the need to experiment with anything new at the present moment. Now, if I run into some sort of issue, I think what you've created is a great resource for people to go back to and say, all right, what am I missing here? What can I do differently? And if that does happen, then that's where I'll be going. So,
all right. So let's talk about what you do and why it's working for you. And one of the things that I've been really interested in talking about this month is habit and routine, morning routine specifically. Mm-hmm. Do you start each day in a consistent way?
The only thing I do consistently to start a day is I have coffee in the morning and then I decide what I want to accomplish that day. Beyond that, there is no set routine. Now, in the summertime, my routine in the morning will often include the walk that I do, that I try to do daily. So, and the reason for that is obviously in the summer, it's very hot in the afternoon. I want to get out and get it done before heat stroke, basically.
Yeah.
And then in the winter, that has to shift because it's way too cold in the morning. So I wait generally to the afternoon when it warms up. Then I'll get my walk in there. That's really the only other part of the routine. And like I said, it changes season to season.
I gotcha. So that's interesting. When you say you decide what you want to accomplish for the day, what is that process? Like, do you have to sit down, you have to look at something, you have to go through things. How do you decide what you want to accomplish each and every day when you wake up?
It depends on, we can get into this a little bit later. It depends on how the things that I need to get done. There's a group of behaviors or tasks that have to be accomplished every so often. And I use a system for tracking that. And a lot of times what I'll look at is the pattern and say, all right, has something been getting left behind? Is something not being done as often as it needs to be done? And then that will become part of my to-do list for accomplishing. A lot of times I'll also have ideas from the day before or the night before where, you know, I am sitting there watching TV or Netflix or whatever, and something will pop into my head and I'll say, all right, I got to get that done tomorrow. And so when I wake up, that automatically becomes part of my list. There's not a ton of structure to it because I hate schedules and I hate pinning myself down to things. And I generally love to do what I'm most inspired to do at the time. So when I'm drinking my coffee, I'm also asking myself, like, what do I really want to do today? If there's stuff that has to be done, then of course we'll fit that in. But it always starts with, what do I really want to do today? And what would, at the end of this day, what will make me feel successful if I've done it?
Do you feel like there's a time of day where you are most productive?
It used to be at night, but shifting my schedule, once I started working at home and being able to work whenever, I've shifted away from the nighttime because it was greatly impacting my sleep and I wasn't sleeping enough. I'm kind of a personality where 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock rolls around, I'm itching to get out of bed and get going, even if I go to bed really late. And that was like the downfall for me that I found. So back when I had my quote unquote real job and I was building this stuff on the side, so I would go to work, I would get home around 9 p.m., I would eat, and then I would work on the side stuff until 1 a.m. And going to bed at 1 a.m., I would still be getting up at like 6 or 7 you know, ready to rock the next day. And it just was not working for, it was really tearing me down health wise, attitude wise, energy wise. So now I've put a block on really when I stop working. I very rarely am working after 7 or 8 p.m. anymore.
Right. And you try to be to bed fairly early because you're maintaining that wake up time.
Yeah, exactly. So I like to be in bed by 10 p.m. now.
All right. So I've heard people say that no matter what time you go to bed, you should have a consistent morning wake up routine. How do you feel about that? Because we've talked extensively before about the importance of sleep. So is it better to get your 8, or is it better to be, in your opinion, consistent in the morning with what time you wake up?
I think it's more important to be consistent with what time you wake up and getting the 8 hours of sleep that you need. Because ultimately, I love practices that are sustainable, right? And I ask myself, like, people feel like they can go on 6 hours, 5 hours, you know, for weeks, months on end. And just what I've found talking to people, and by the way, a lot of the people who come to Total Body Reboot, right, have this issue. And they're like, you know, I did it for 8 years and then I crashed. And I realized my health has become a disaster. My energy levels have become a disaster. So I kind of see, you know, where if you had asked these people 3 years into it, they'd be like, ah, I'm fine. I'm fine on 5 hours. I'm fine on 6 hours, right? Mm-hmm. And then one day it comes where their body finally says no and it starts shutting them down. And then they realize, I wasn't really fine on that. So I'm very much a fan of just making sure, prioritizing sleep, respecting that you need a lot of sleep, and getting the 8 hours, trying not to wake up. I tell people, this is the big CrossFit issue. People will get 6 hours of sleep because they have to get up at 5 a.m. to get to CrossFit five days a week, right? So they're putting all of this other stress. We've talked about this before, stacking your stressors.
Yep.
You know, it's just, and it doesn't, it always ends in injury or sickness or whatever. And I just, I'm not going to put myself through that. And I don't recommend other people do either.
All right. So 10 p.m., Kevin, sounds like a very ambitious bedtime to me. Do you, you know, you talked about trying to finish what you're doing by 7 or 8, right? Mm-hmm. Are you completely disconnecting from the technological world at that point, not including TV, I guess, but are you away from your computer? Have you put your phone down a fair amount of time to have your brain in the proper state for sleep at that, what seems like a child's bedtime to me, 10 p.m. I'm so envious of that. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and it may, I mean, you know, it may be because I have kids.
That's
I don't
right.
know.
Yep.
Right? So that might help. But no, I don't. So what I found is that watching television doesn't impact my ability to fall asleep or get great sleep. So that's not an issue for me. Even checking my phone here and there. Now, I'm not on it. Like, I'm not looking at it constantly. But that really doesn't impact. What does impact the quality of sleep, and the reason why I tried to stop working by 7 or 8 p.m. is because when my brain is in work mode, and it's problem solving, and it's still coming up with ideas, and it's thinking about this or stressing about this, that's the mode that impacts my sleep. I can't go from that mode to sleep. So I need a 2-hour-ish buffer where I can just start to downregulate my brain in that capacity and really just veg out, like stop thinking about all that stuff and just be entertained maybe for a couple hours and then easily go to bed.
Yeah, you know, I always found that kind of unwinding was really helpful with sleep, even if it involved, you know, Netflix or whatever.
Mm-hmm, right.
That helped me get to bed much earlier. But say you still have these ideas that come to you. You mentioned earlier, this thing needs to be done tomorrow.
Mm-hmm,
now,
right.
You have, like my last guest, Kevin Koskela, you have a lot of irons in the fire, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to change focus very rapidly and very significantly from time to time. So let's just inventory what you do. You have two children. One is a newborn, pretty much. One is a toddler, right?
Yes.
Okay. You're married. You have a rebooted body, which is the first site that we ever talked about back in 2014, I think.
Yep.
The Powerful Parenting Podcast.
Yes. Well, Revolutionary Parent Radio is what it got rebranded to.
All right. So
yes.
Revolutionary Parent is the site, which includes you writing articles and you doing the podcast. Mm-hmm. You also do coaching.
Yes.
For Total Body Reboot.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot. What am I forgetting? There's more.
There is more.
There's much more.
Veropure.com, which we can discuss, is about to face its end. And we have learningtolight.com, which just launched January 2016, that we can talk about. And that might be it.
All right. So as you're sitting there in a more passive state, let's say between 7 and 10,
mm-hmm.
ideas must occasionally come flying into your head about tomorrow or this week or even some higher horizon of focus.
Yes.
Some big idea. So what do you do with that stuff when that happens? How do you capture that?
That's what I use Evernote for. Mm-hmm. Evernote primarily is my idea capture tool. Evernote and another app called Pocket. And Pocket is an app that allows you to save articles, videos, etc. for later consumption. And a lot of times ideas will be sparked by me reading or watching something. And so I'll need to quickly save that. I may not have time to finish reading it or finish watching it. So I just click the little Pocket button and it saves it in my quote unquote Pocket. I don't really like the name, but that's how it works. So those two tools together. And what I've done in Evernote is I've created a notebook for each brand or each internet property. And within that major notebook are other smaller notebooks based on the section. So maybe articles, podcast ideas, etc. So I'll go into whatever notebook I need to be in. Maybe I think of an article idea. I'm like, okay, let's go into Evernote. Let's go to the right notebook. Let's make that an entry as an article idea. Same with podcast ideas. And then I can actually flesh out more details about those things later on in Evernote. But that's pretty much what I use Evernote for, because like you said many, many times, getting the ideas out of your head is probably the most important part, especially late at night, because you're not going to be able to sleep if that thing is still swimming around.
Now, do you have experience with the, and this would have been further back in the past, this used to happen to me all the time. This idea is so good, there's no way I could forget it.
I have had that, and I yep. have forgotten it.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's why I started writing everything down.
Indeed, indeed. So Evernote for you, like I talked about Evernote being a very varied kind of tool for me, but it is part more of a system for you, it sounds mm-hmm. like. So what are some of the other parts of that system? Now, first we should point out that you're an iOS user.
Yeah, so I can just go down kind of like my tools and apps that I rely on. The first is Gmail.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these you're going to see are available on the web or iOS, which I love because if I'm traveling or if I'm away, I can still access stuff very easily. I love Gmail for the labeling system. I know that a lot of people like the Outlook, Thunderbird type programs, and those have folders, right? And an email can only live in one folder. Well, Gmail's like, why does that need to happen? Let's just label them. So you can put many different labels on something, search by label, and you're not just putting an email in one spot and making it stay there. So I use labels primarily for keeping the different brands separated. Things are auto-labeled when they come into Gmail. So if somebody emails me at Rebooted Body, that's getting labeled Rebooted Body automatically, things like that. So it helps me stay organized in that regard. And I did hear one of your conversations, I think it was the last one, talking about the general email questions that come in and not having to answer them, right? And I actually wanted to provide an alternate way to look at that.
Okay.
So as far as building a brand and running a company, there's some advice. I can't remember who wrote the article. Can't remember his name. But he basically said, do things that don't scale. And it sounds like counterintuitive advice, because you're like, well, I should do things that I can scale. That's how I'm going to grow my company. What business does a CEO have in answering generic emails that come in, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what I found is that somebody's coming to your brand for the first time and they're putting out a little feeler email. And if the CEO, like they get a response from the top person of the organization, starting a conversation with them, it's kind of a shock to them, first of all. People tell me that all the time. Second, it really allows me to dig into the information I need. What is this person searching for? What do they want? Are they interested in buying one of our products or getting coaching or something like that? And I can derive a lot of knowledge from that. And I have conversations with so many people this way that I start to see what the trends are. And I start to say, oh, you know what? We can make a product for this. Like, here's 10 people that I haven't been able to sell them something because we don't have anything to sell them for what they need. Why don't we make something? Mm-hmm. And that comes from those conversations with people. And very often, they'll be ready to already buy what we have. And just by me responding, starting a conversation, I can show them why it'll help them. And bang, they're a customer. So you can generate a ton of revenue just by answering those very basic emails that come in and not automating responses for them or not sending them off to somebody who can respond but doesn't really have maybe sales experience, right? So,
you know, it's true. I actually go looking for those emails sometimes. We have a Facebook fan page, and there's hundreds of unread messages in there because I realized that just as a marketing tool, that page had very little value unless I wanted to invest money into it. So I stopped paying attention to it. And maybe once a week, I'll go and just skim through the emails that have come in. A lot of new listeners, people who just discovered the show. And that's like a really, after doing something for over 6 years, it's really exciting to find people like that. Mm-hmm. You know, now my first impulse is to like turn them into interns and be like, oh, you're on episode 17. Can you just keep a notebook? And anytime I say like a clever one or two liner, write it down and send it to me or let me know if there's things, you know, that should be turned into videos. But yeah, I want to hear what those people have to say. Because mm-hmm. that's like, you know, going back and accessing a different time of my life. You know, they're experiencing this stuff that's like antique for me in a way that's fresh. So, yeah, I totally agree with you that an activity like that, even though, as Kevin Koskela said, it's something that he would outsource. In that case, I see that as a valuable activity. And it's not just that it's ultimately going to lead to revenue. It's also has an emotional payoff as well. It's inspiring to hear. You know, like most of my memories of people saying, I love what you're doing. This is brand new. This is exciting. Most of those memories came from a long time ago, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So
absolutely.
It's nice when they're new.
Keeping your thumb on what beginners need is really important because you get so far into a project. This is probably one of the big mistakes that a lot of, you know, online business owners make or small business owners make is they're always thinking about what is the next product I want to create? What is the next product I think people need? A lot of times that gets them into the realm of creating something that people don't even know they need, which then in order to sell it, you're going to have to educate the person on why they need it. Get them to understand and grasp that and then hopefully buy it. That's a big obstacle. It's better, I think, to listen to what people know they need already and are asking for and just make that instead. And we get so far into a project that we forget what the beginner needs or what's missing from their life right now that we could easily make for them and provide. And people may hear what I'm saying as, oh, he just talks to people because he wants to sell them stuff. He wants to make money. And I've said this time and time again, that's my job because the programs that I create are what actually get people results. If blog articles, which I produce in mass and podcasts and all that really change people's lives, their lives would have been changed already. Those things don't work for doing that, for making real, like deep change. They have to do an actual program with coaching, that kind of stuff, right? So it's my job if I want to improve the lives of people, it's my job to get them into a program. They think that blog articles are going to solve their problems. They think that podcasts, they're wrong. Those things are not going to change their life. So in order to change their life, I've got to find a way to get them into the program where we can roll up our sleeves, work together and make it happen. And people get held accountable and problems get solved. Challenges get overcome, things like that. That's what I need people to get into. So it's really, like I said, it's my job to have these conversations and to get them in that direction.
Okay. So there, I have to challenge you. And mm-hmm. now, in this respect, I no doubt you absolutely know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. My follow-up question, though, why can't exposure to a podcast change the life of a person? Like, maybe it's different in health and fitness, right? Maybe there's more obstacles to overcome there. But why can't exposure to a podcast like School Sucks or Free Domain Radio, why can't that change somebody's life in a meaningful, yeah. lasting way?
I think it absolutely can. I think it absolutely can. And again, I am talking about this from the standpoint of health and fitness.
Yeah.
I would say that it would be any industry where doing the work to change is really hard, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of ingrained habits going in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And it's like, will people actually buckle down and do this for a significant amount of time? That's the other aspect, you know? How easy is it to – so listening to a podcast about why the public school system is not so great, while it may challenge me, it doesn't require me to really physically do anything. It's just a mental challenge.
Here's
right?
the difference. This is what I think it is. All right. Yeah. So if our podcast is about – being a better learner and being a better thinker, and the content itself challenges people to learn and think as they consume it, it separates it from something like a health and fitness content, where listening to a health podcast or you know, reading The 4-Hour Body doesn't burn calories. You know, reading some diet book doesn't change what's in your refrigerator or what food cravings you have automatically.
There has to be an application of what you're hearing.
Yeah, so they're distinct in that sense, and I agree with what you're saying about your line of work for sure. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so we can say if it requires application, then it would be better off if they actually committed to that. And when people commit financially, they tend to follow through.
I got you. Absolutely. I agree with that. So all of that grew out of
Gmail.
Gmail. Nice.
So I was going to say the only really significant label I use is when I start these conversations with people, I can quickly determine whether they are very serious about reaching their goals or whether they would just kind of – they like the idea of reaching their goals, but I can tell they're not really ready yet. If they're really ready, I label them follow up. And if they're not really ready, I just kind of let the conversation dwindle out because, look, if they're not ready, then I'm not wasting my time. I can't make them ready. So it's just I have a nice day. Thank you. And move on. And then part of my daily practice is going into Gmail and clicking on the follow-up label and seeing who I need to respond to. And say, so maybe there's 8, 9, 10 people in there. I see, and Gmail tells you when was the last email sent or read or whatever. And if it's been a couple days, then I'll just follow up with them. That's what that label's for. And I'll say, hey, how's it going? Let's, continue this conversation. And that's part of my routine, and Gmail helps keep that organized.
Excellent. Let's talk about another Google product that I have long sought a replacement for.
Yeah.
Something better.
Yes.
Than Google Calendar, but I'm unable to find it. When people hear this conversation that we're having now, they will have heard the last show with an entrepreneur and author named Kevin Cruz. Does that name ring a bell?
I think so. Yeah.
So
he
talks about, really successful, highly productive people don't work from to-do lists. They all work from their calendars because calendars remind us of the value of time down to the minute. He was saying that one of the most important principles to understand, and it's so simple and we should all know it anyway, is that there's 1,440 minutes in a day, right? So just thinking about that, because I would, if somebody said, yeah, do you have an hour this week for this, I'd be like, yeah, an hour in a week, sure. There's so many of those,
right?
So thinking in terms of minutes is something that the calendar helps reinforce. So how do you use a calendar?
So I do tend to put tasks on the calendar at a specific time of the day where I wanted to just, and Google Calendar is great because it has the alerts. So I'll be doing something else and Google Calendar will alert me and say, hey, in 15 minutes, you said you wanted to accomplish this. So then it's just a matter of, oh, do I still have time for that? Is that still important? Is that as important as it was when I first put it on the calendar? Things like that go through my head. And then generally I just execute on it. And like I said, and like you said, putting it at a specific time is great rather than just having it on a to-do list where maybe I get really engrossed in something and something gets forgotten, right? Or delayed until another time. So having it on a calendar at an actual time is a great way to organize that.
And how about a concept like batching? Like similar tasks. I think a lot of people are still, especially if they use something like Outlook or Thunderbird or even just their phone dinging all day, they're getting notified when they're getting emails. Mm-hmm. But having a set time, and this was one of the things that Kevin really helped me out with in the last show, to deal with emails, like a 45-minute block that is called email. Do you do anything like that?
I do, but it's not scheduled. It may happen at different times of the day, and it still may happen multiple times per day. But I do, you know, just set aside, all right, the next 20 minutes, I'm going to go make sure all emails are taken care of, nothing's on fire, things like that. And then I'll get back to whatever I was working on. Or generally, this will happen in between shifts from like one project to another, or one big to-do to another to-do. There's going to be a gap in between where I can just kind of, again, downregulate my brain, go do something easy like email, and then transition into the next thing that takes a lot of mental capacity.
I got you. All right. Let's talk about Way of Life.
Yes. So this is the app that... And actually, we can go talk about my general schedule first.
Yeah.
And then, because the way I have this kind of broken down is there's a general schedule Sunday through Saturday where certain things have to happen on certain days for very specific reasons. That schedule I try to keep to a bare minimum because I said I don't really like schedules. I don't like being tied to things. So I keep that as minimalistic as possible. Then I have things that I do every single day. Then I have a long list of important things that I do on any given day. And then that's where Way of Life comes in. And Way of Life helps me keep track of those things that happen on any given day that are really important, things that have to happen a certain amount of times a week or a certain amount of times a month. And what this app does, it's very, very simple interface. You open the app, you tell it the habits, and they can be positive habits or they can be negative habits. I don't really like the terms. Like it's, you put something in and it says, is that good for you? And you say yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't like things that moralize behaviors and stuff like that, but whatever, it works. So I put in my list of things and I'll just go through those. So a sandbag workout, I'll put that in there. Cook two meals at home. So that's a habit that just helps me keep on track with healthy eating and making sure that I'm just following through with that. Exercise or do what you love today style activities like we've talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
Having sex, drinking alcohol. And drink alcohol would be one of those things where is drinking alcohol good for you? And you click no. And that way when you tell it that you've drank alcohol, it'll put a red box instead of a green box. And I'll kind of talk about this more in a minute.
Okay.
Playing tennis, doing a brisk walk, publishing an article, publishing a podcast, and doing some high-intensity interval training. Now, what I found in the past is what most people do is they'll create a weekly schedule, and they'll say, you know what, Thursdays is my day for doing a sandbag workout. Friday is my day for playing tennis. Saturday is when I do high-intensity interval training. And then what happens is their schedule gets a little clogged up or somebody has to cancel or something last minute comes up. And then one of those things doesn't happen and they skip it and they miss it. They don't do it at all. And eventually they're like, maybe I should throw in the towel on this whole idea of pre-scheduling all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So my routine is basically like, how many of these things have I done in X amount of time or X amount of days? So and this is what Way of Life tracks, every single night at 9 p.m., Way of Life pops up a little message and says, hey, time to check in with your habits. So I open the app and it just takes me down the list. Did you do a sandbag workout today? No. Did you cook two meals at home? Yes. Did you exercise or dwell? Yes. Did you have sex? No. Did you drink alcohol? Yes. Bang, 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 bang. You just go down the whole list and it just makes a red or green block on that day. And then after like a week or 2 weeks, you can go in and look at a chart and it'll show the patterns of all of those different habits or behaviors. And you can say, oh, sandbag workout, look at all the red blocks. I haven't been doing that. I haven't been keeping up with that. That needs to happen tomorrow. And then you just go down the list with that stuff, and it makes sure that you're staying on track in general with the habits that you want to accomplish without holding yourself to any type of schedule.
Yeah, I really like that. And there's probably valuable data there if you're also doing something like keeping a journal. You know, right. And maybe you can compare the two where you see how habits change in different emotional states or when there are different stressors in life. Do you do anything like that? Any writing or tracking like that?
I don't do it on a consistent basis. I do it from time to time. I tend to bring out journaling when I'm in more of a stressed state. If I feel like everything is nice and in control and I'm happy and productivity is good, then I typically don't do that. But I like Way of Life because, again, number one, it prompts you. Number two, it's very quick. It's much quicker than writing things down in a journal. I can go bang, 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 and I'm done. And again, it will show you patterns very easily. Whereas if I want to journal to figure this stuff out, I'm going to have to go back and read each day and see. And there's no order to things, and I might forget some things. If there's a new habit that I want to put, that I want to make sure it happens, I just open Way of Life, I hit new, I type in the habit name, and it remembers it for me. And again, it asks me every single day all of these things in the same order every single time. Nothing ever gets left out. So in that regard, it's much faster. It's much more effective at tracking things over time than a basic journal is.
Do you ever feel like there's extended periods of time where you're unproductive or you say, gosh, I could be doing a much better job of generally taking care of myself? Or do you feel at this point that having a tool like this and having this conscious living approach has minimized or eliminated that feeling?
I think it's definitely minimized it. It hasn't really eliminated it because there's always going to be an ebb and a flow in your momentum and your just what you're passionate about at the time. So there's times where I'm just not passionate about doing a sandbag workout.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the times where Way of Life is going to say, hey, you haven't done this in a while, right? And I might have to just force myself to do it or choose a different activity and say, hey, are sandbag workouts still something I enjoy? If not, let me just delete this habit or behavior and replace it with something else that I do enjoy. That would probably be more productive. And again, that gives you a chance to have that conversation with yourself.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Now, when it comes to work, so there will be times where my motivation for working on Rebooted Body ebbs and flows, where there's no podcast ideas in my head. There's no article ideas in my head. And look, we're into hundreds of podcast episodes now, hundreds, well, probably well over 200 in-depth articles. Sometimes I get to the point where I'm like, what else is there to talk about? You know,
amen.
What else have I not said that's going to help anybody? And I hate the idea of these blogs and other sites who just put out content for content's sake, right? You'll read one of their 7 daily blah, 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 and you read it and there's nothing new in it. There's nothing helpful in it. You could just tell they wrote it for like a search engine or just to say, hey, I published an article this week. And I hate that. Like, I want to put out something that actually is going to help somebody when they read it or listen to it. Because again, I'm talking about my own time and respecting my own time. I want to respect other people's time. There's no reason to put out empty articles and podcasts for people. So this is why I like having my hand in different things. So if I am down on Rebooted Body stuff at the time, I could say, you know what? I'm really passionate about right now, even though I'm down on Rebooted Body, I'm really passionate about photography right now. And mm-hmm. then vice versa. Maybe I'm down on photography right now. Here comes my passion again for Rebooted Body, or here comes my passion for Revolutionary Parent. Let me put my focus there. And I found also that, so I made a transition a long time ago where there was the advice of, if you want to be successful at blogging, you have to produce an article a day.
Yeah.
And you have to put out maybe 5. You could take the weekends off, but you got to take 5 articles and publish those every single week. And what I found is that's totally not necessary, not necessarily at all. I can get away with publishing 1 article a week and have the exact same traffic results, especially if I focus the other effort on promoting that article. getting it into the hands of people and not just letting it die in my archives, right? So I'll put energy into one article a week there. And then instead of writing four other articles, what can I do? Oh, I can write an article for learningtolight.com. I can write an article for revolutionaryparent.com. So I think people put maybe too much weight on specific things that don't actually need to happen. They could scale those back, find time to put elsewhere. That's what I've done. And that's what's worked for me.
Absolutely. You also told me that, you know, when you're evaluating a project, a prospective project, if it's not a hell yes, then it's a no. Right. So that kind of lines up with what you're saying. Time is very valuable for you at this point.
Absolutely. And I've the reason I've made that kind of rule for myself is because I've gone down the rabbit hole of stuff that sounded okay, pretty good in the beginning. And then I quickly realized this sucks. This isn't fun at all. It may be successful, but, you know, and I'll make mistakes still. So we could talk about some things that are on the chopping block. Right?
Yeah, I'd be interested in some examples.
Yeah, so veropure.com. I don't know if I told you about this last time I was on the show.
Supplement?
Starting this supplement thing. And I wanted to do it partly as a learning experiment to see how hard is it to bring a supplement to market, how hard is it to source quality ingredients, because I'm in that industry and I want to know why do other supplement companies cut corners if they do? And is the talk about, oh, you know, they just do it for profit and blah, 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 is all that stuff real? So I did it myself to find out. I thought it was going to be really fun. I was like, yeah, we can discuss formulas and we can do sourcing and it'd be cool to actually have a physical product to ship to people. No, it sucks. It really sucks. There's nothing fun about it. And after the product is made, all your job is marketing and figuring out what the next product's going to be. And it also has a massive risk to it because the manufacturers won't produce anything for less than $10,000. So they're going to tell you right up front, hand us $10,000 or we're not making you anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even for each product. That's for a flavor of a product. So with like the protein, we did the vanilla, $10,000. You want to do chocolate? Another $10,000. You want to do strawberry? Another $10,000. So I was looking at the whole big picture and just saying to myself, you know what? Why am I doing this? Like I made it, it was profitable. So on the vanilla that we ordered, that was profitable. But when I looked at reordering or going to the next thing or even developing the next supplement that's totally different, I was like, there is no way I'm investing any more time on this. I'm glad I didn't lose money, but this is on the chopping block. Now, some people might say, but you spent all that time developing the website. You spent all that time on social media, creating the Veropure accounts and doing all this. And yeah, I did. And I'm willing to just take that behind the barn and shoot it in the head in 5 seconds. I don't care because I'd rather shut it down now than slave away doing something that really sucks for the next year or 2 years or whatever. I'm not interested in doing that. So it's dead to me.
Right.
And I just move it out of the way.
So that's not necessarily a failure, right? I mean, if something is profitable, but my question would be, and this is something that's come up a few times earlier in the month, how do you manage that fear, or does that fear exist of public types of failure with some of these ventures?
It doesn't. It did in the beginning. It did in the beginning. It doesn't now. And I think because I've done it a couple times now, so we had like an inner circle that failed. This was an idea of just giving people extra content on a very small monthly sum, and it wasn't very popular. Again, it made a profit, but we're talking about hundreds or a couple thousand dollars.
Yeah.
Nothing big, but it did require a ton of time. And I was like, ah, man, this, it's just not making sense. So I shut it down. And when I shut it down, nobody said anything. Nobody's like, ha ha ha, you screwed up. You failed. You didn't have a good idea or you didn't execute. Well, nobody cared. Nobody said anything. Now, Veropure.com, I think is going to be a little bit different because I got a ton of emails from people that loved it. Right? They love this protein and it's going to be unfortunate that it's not going to be available anymore. So that's why I call, even though that was successful in terms of, okay, we didn't lose money on it. It is a failure to me because we gave people something that we are no longer going to be able to provide them in the future. That's why I call that a failure. But I don't take it as a knock on me because, look, before I created Rebooted Body, I had 10 other sites in different genres that I've dabbled with since because I've been building websites since I was like 12 that have failed. Massive, like failed in a way that they didn't even get, you know, 200 email subscribers or 100 email subscribers before I killed them. That I poured hours and hours and hours and months into that nobody even knows about. So I understand that if you want to have something that's really successful, it's probably going to require failing 10 or 20 times before it. And I'm not afraid to continue just putting myself out there and saying, hey, is this going to work? Is this going to be valuable? And let the market decide. If the market says no, or if me personally, just I'm not passionate about it anymore after I start building it, I'm not afraid to cut it loose and move on to the next thing.
Absolutely. I have to ask because I'm curious, what was one of these website failures, like a really monumental one? One that you thought would be, a slam dunk?
So I had one called MarshallPreneur.com, and I think I made that very early on, maybe when I was 20, if I'm thinking correctly. But the goal was to create a membership site for martial arts school owners. And I still think that it could be done. Now, what I found out is martial arts school owners typically are building businesses off formulas. So they buy like a curriculum, they buy business advice from a big organization, right? And then they just implement it. It's not a franchise. It's just a system of how do you build, because they're great martial artists, but they're not business owners, right? So they have to get outside advice on how to build this stuff. So they bought into that. And I think they're just interested in kind of playing out that system, and they're not interested in anything anybody else has to say. So it was hard to reach customers in that regard. They also tend to be pretty cheap. I mean, martial arts school owners, unless they have a massive number of schools, aren't rich by any means. So they don't have a lot of capital to outlay on learning other things. And I just wasn't experienced in building online businesses the way that I am today. So I probably didn't execute well on a lot of things. So that died. I mean, I got one customer and I poured a ton of time and effort and money into it, and it went zero. It went nowhere.
When you were doing all of these things in the past, so we're going back, you know, more than a decade to some of these earlier ventures. How would you describe your, first of all, not just your awareness of your long-term goals, but also the specificity? Were you thinking long term with a lot of these things, and why were you doing these things? Was it part of a bigger vision or a bigger purpose for your life?
I was not thinking long term. I was thinking short term, because at the time I was broke and I wanted to make money quickly. And I had this idea of being a multi-millionaire business owner, which I've completely ditched, by the way. I don't care at all about millions of dollars. So yeah, I was thinking very short term. And the reason why I was doing it, though, because you asked the reason, it's because I was born an entrepreneur. That's it. Like, I have fun creating things.
Right.
I have fun building businesses. That's really what I'm passionate about. So while those things were fun, it would have been nice if they had actually worked out. But again, this is the lesson of fail, 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 succeed. Fail, 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 succeed. You know, I think it has to happen. There's no other way to learn, because I certainly didn't learn how to build an online business in public school.
Yeah.
I certainly didn't learn how to do accounting for business in public school. I didn't learn anything that I needed to be an entrepreneur. Nothing did I learn from public school. So what was the only way to learn it? Go out into the marketplace and fuck it up. That's the only way to do it.
Yeah. How did that change over time as far as clarity? Like, once you started to learn all these things, I'm really interested in how you set and monitor goals today.
I just, like I said, keeping an eye. I know that Rebooted Body, in terms of, so other brands or properties may be different, or businesses may be different, but I know for Rebooted Body that it is going to be successful. We have a sales page 4-hour program that gets a specific conversion rate. It requires a specific amount of traffic to hit that page in order to create certain numbers, right? An outcome. So the way to do that is through the different channels of article writing, podcast publishing, etc. So I know that the habits of if an article gets published this often and a podcast episode gets published this often and I start this X many conversations with new people who email me, that we're going to get the same outcome all the time and it's going to continue to be successful. Mm-hmm. And the more we're able to grow the traffic, the more the revenue is going to grow from that. Conversion rate stays the same, but you increase traffic, you're going to increase the overall sales. So that's how I keep that on track. And by the way, I mean, we haven't talked about Kim, who is my employee at Rebooted Body, handles now the majority of the coaching work, handles a lot of the beginner emails that I talked about. So mm-hmm. I'll take the ones that I really think I can hit home with, and then I'll shuffle the rest off to her. She'll start conversations with them and go through the process. But those are more of the ones where I don't think they're quite as serious, so I send them off to her. Or I could just be really overloaded at the time and I send them off to her. But she'll go ahead and do that work. She handles all the memberships and a lot of the software that's required for the academy side of things. I call her the head coach of the academy now. So she handles pretty much everything in regards to that. That lets me focus on growth, podcast publication, article publication, things like that. But I know that as long as those habits get done, those things get published, that we're going to be okay.
I gotcha. So that's actually a nice transition into talking about automation, because mm-hmm. there is probably a significant amount of it in what you do, right? I mean, if you want to be able to have this balanced life of being able to spend, you know, time with your family, you have to be in a place where you can walk away for a period of time and everything still runs smoothly.
Right. Yeah. So we can talk about the email automation system that I use. That's going to be really critical. When we just talked about numbers and getting the right numbers to the right places, the email automation system is really important for that. I do want to talk about another failure that I had real quick, because this kind of shows the evolution of things.
Sure.
And how things just really suck in the beginning. But when I was 18, I started my first official business, you know, the first one where I asked the government for permission. And so I created a corporation, and it was a mobile bartending business, not online. It was totally offline. I did have a website for it and tried to market it online and stuff like that. But it was a mobile bartending business for weddings and private parties and events and things like that.
Uh-huh.
I had a bartender that I went to bartending school with, and we decided that, okay, he would be like the bartender, I would be the marketer, let's find the clients type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was afraid at the time to pick up the phone and call people. Somebody would call for information, and I was afraid to call them back and have a discussion with them and schedule their event and take their money. And I was like, man, this is – I didn't even know what to do with my – I was like, how am I going to be a multimillionaire business owner? I can't even talk to somebody on the phone. I can't even schedule a meeting with somebody.
So what do you think? Was it apprehension? It wasn't apprehension about talking on the phone. This is just my guess. Maybe like playing it forward to getting this client and failing. What do you think it was?
I think it had a lot. I think, number one, I knew they were going to have a bunch of questions for me, and I hadn't done this before, and I didn't want to sound stupid or, you know, just ridiculous. Like, hey, you're the business owner. Why don't you have answers for these things? So I didn't want to do that. And yeah, I didn't want to have to close a sale, you know, ask the person for money. I didn't want the weight and responsibility of, okay, now we book this person's wedding. Are we actually going to be able to show up and execute? Because I didn't really feel like we had everything down to a T, that we were super organized or anything. And I didn't want to screw up their event.
Right.
So there was just all of these things going around in my head. And the easiest thing to do was just not talk to the person, you know? And so needless to say, wasn't very successful.
I gotcha.
But anyway, so now, you know, evolution of that is I want to talk to everybody that I possibly can, because I know that talking to people is how you connect and grow and things like that. So email automation, I use a company called ActiveCampaign, And what this does is email online is the best way to talk to an individual person, get them started in a conversation, and get them to go to the right places. So we have an automated sequence that welcomes them, and it tells them all about what we do, why we do it, how we do it. So when anytime someone gets on our email list, they go through this sequence, and it kind of just brings them up to speed on what's going on here. And then it asks them questions along the way. You know, the second email they get, ask them what they're struggling with. So they reply to that email. It comes to me. Bang, there's a conversation starter. So I email them back, and we start a conversation that's not automated. So this is, again, doing things that don't scale. That doesn't scale. There's only one of me, yep, right? But I'm going to do it anyway because it's valuable. But then they'll continue on in the automation. And if at any point in time they click on, for example, Total Body Reboot and go to the sales page, the marketing system, the marketing automation system says, oh, this person clicked that link. This is what they're interested in. Now shift them to a different series of emails. And this series is going to tell them all about Total Body Reboot. It's just like if somebody came into your store, picked up a sweater, and a salesperson walked over to them and started asking them, you know, why do you want a sweater? Why do you like that one? Maybe you'll like this one better over here, that kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. But it's all automated. So this tool does the job of educating, informing, and selling for me. By the time they're ready to buy, they may have one or two additional questions. They can reach us on the support system or call our phone number or whatever, and we can answer those. But they're pretty much just ready to sign up, and it didn't really require anything from me. They came to the site. They got on the email list. The email list informed and educated them, and then eventually sold them into the place that they really need to be, which is the program.
I gotcha. And then
Typical business where I would be spending a lot of time, hours on the phone, making sales, driving to meetings, none of that stuff has to happen for me. So that's one reason why there's a lot of time available to do other things is I'm not on sales calls. I'm not in sales meetings and things where traditional jobs and companies would have people in those roles.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that a lot of the initial contact with people has to happen through social media, right? Like that's how people are exposed to the work that you do that leads them to the places where, you know, the greatest benefit for them might lie.
Social is the second largest channel for finding us. The first is Google. So we get the vast majority of our traffic from Google searches. And that's why I've creating the content that I've created is answering specific questions for people. Like, is a ketogenic diet healthy? Well, somebody may go to Google and type that in. That happens to be the title of an article that I've written. So it comes up high in the search. They click on it. They read the article. In the articles, there's links to other articles. There's going to be an overlay that invites them to download a free guide. That's how they end up onto our email list. Mm-hmm. Right. So, but yeah, the majority of traffic that we get comes from those Google searches. And then the second comes from social media.
Okay. And social media is something where automation also exists?
There is, yes. So I need to make sure that our social media channels just stay updated with content. And I found that it really sucks to just have to make that a daily habit to go on every day and find stuff to post. So on Sundays, and going back to that general schedule where certain things have to happen on certain days, and I'll just run down the line of that. So Sunday, I schedule social media for the week, and I use a tool called Hootsuite. Mm-hmm. And that allows me to hit – actually, all my brands can be loaded into Hootsuite, and I can go from brand to brand to brand or property to property and say, all right, we're going to schedule these things. And I put Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Hootsuite actually auto-schedules stuff for you. So you just load in the content, and it decides when to post it based on when you're getting the most clicks and views based on what's happened in the past.
Interesting. Now, yeah. How do you determine what you want to set up for, say, a given week?
So I just, first of all, I try to, and I've shifted more lately to this, I try to use like maybe a 3-to-1-ish ratio of sharing my own stuff versus sharing just interesting stuff I found on the topic. And Hootsuite also lets you cheat a little bit on this because they have a discovery tool built into it. You put in topics and it will go out to the internet and find the latest stuff on this that might be interesting and say, do you want to schedule this? Mm-hmm. You say, oh, yeah, that looks interesting. I'll schedule that. And it'll put it in your schedule for you. So I'm not having to go out to like Reddit and all these other places to find interesting content. Hootsuite kind of brings it to me and asks me if I want to share it or not.
So this is Twitter, Facebook, anything else?
Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn, Google Plus. It's maybe a few others. I don't think they have Instagram in there yet, but there's a few others that it does. But I primarily do work on – Kim handles Pinterest. She does all that stuff by hand. I primarily handle Twitter and Facebook. And then I throw stuff on Google Plus, not because there's any sort of community there, but I found that when you share something on Google Plus, because Google owns Google, it tends to show up in search results. So it just kind of is a bonus that way.
Absolutely.
But I get no engagement on Google Plus, but I throw my content on there because a lot of times my Google Plus share will show up on a search result before my actual article will. So it's helpful in that regard.
Interesting. And one more type of automation when it comes to scheduling, this app Calendly. Earlier in the conversation, you talked about not liking to keep a tight schedule. You want, you want to avoid that. And in fact, in the whole week of your life, setup here, you sent me an extremely sparse day-by-day schedule, right?
Yeah.
But with all the things you're involved in, you know, recording and scheduling podcasts that involve other people, I mean, but also doing these things like coaching calls, what does a week of appointments look like? I'm just curious, like how many hard time commitments you would actually have in a week?
It depends week to week. So if we have a rush of signups for Total Body Reboot, what happens in the beginning is like on the third day, an automated message pops up on their dashboard and says, hey, how are things going? Would you like to schedule a 20-minute one-on-one call with me and discuss stage one and your goals and things you've done in the past? And I just want to have a conversation with them. Now, Kim has started to handle more of these because I've been working with her on doing that. But we want to have that like personal touch in the very beginning to make sure everybody's on the same page. And that will invite them to go to my Calendly. So it has a link to Calendly. And what Calendly does is when you're setting it up, you tell Calendly, here are the hours I'm available every day for talking on the phone. And it'll allow people to go in and check off what time they want. And I already know it's going to be good for me because it's within the time block that I've allotted. And it automatically handles time zone issues, by the way. So if somebody is in Australia, which we have a lot of clients in Australia, New Zealand, Europe, it will automatically take care of that stuff for them. So it'll show them the time in their time zone, even though it's scheduling it and it's going to tell me in my time zone. So that really helps. And all I have to do is confirm. So when they schedule something, Calendly sends me an email and says, hey, this person scheduled at X time. But I don't have to do anything with it because it's also automatically put on my Google Calendar. So
right.
And it's automatically set with a notification too. So Google Calendar I have set up for everything I put in has an automatic 15-minute notification ahead of it. So that way I never really miss anything. Even if I miss that email, I don't miss the appointment because it got on my calendar and it got a notification set up for it. I use that for coaching calls. I use that for podcast guests. So if somebody's going to be on the podcast, I send them the Calendly link and you can send them a different link for each thing. So if you want to send them a podcast guest link, it'll be automatically creating an hour or a 90-minute block or whatever you set versus if you send them the coaching call link or the sales call link, it'll give them a 20-minute block to choose from. And you can also tell Calendly only allow 2 phone calls every day. Don't allow any more than that. So if 2 people have scheduled a call that day, even though there's more time available, it'll block that whole day off and force them to the next day.
This is the thing.
It is, man.
Wow.
Yes. This is how I stay sane with having to talk to people and get that schedule all sorted out.
Yeah, because my follow-up question, and this one is more for me, and I know we're running out of time, so I have a question for me and then a question for the whole audience, and then we'll be done. But I wanted to ask, like, how do you feel when a day is just wall-to-wall appointments? I'm not in love with that feeling, and I've had more of those days over the last 2 months than usual. And I think deep down I know, you don't work well you know, where you're just straight out one thing after another all day. You need to be able to get away from the desk. You definitely need to stand up and walk and move. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like if you know yourself and how you work and when you burn out, this can basically be automated to respond to your needs.
Oh, absolutely. Because here's the other side of Calendly, which this is a brilliant, I mean, it's brilliant software. If I go into Google Calendar and let's say I have decided, you know, I woke up, I had my coffee, I said, you know what, an article has to get written today. I haven't written an article in a little while based on way of life. So I'm going to write an article today. I can go on Google Calendar and I can say, I'm going to be writing an article from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. this morning. Mm-hmm. And I put that on the calendar and I mark myself as busy. And guess what happens on Calendly? Calendly doesn't allow anybody to schedule things in that block. So Calendly looks at your Google Calendar as well. And any time that is already scheduled, it removes from Calendly. So you can't double book things and people can't get in when you don't want them to get in. And if I'm taking a day off, you know, I look at my list of things and I'm like, oh, Friday looks like I don't really have much to do that day. I'd really love just a day of doing nothing. I go into Calendly or I go into Google Calendar and I go to Friday and I put an all-day appointment of whatever, just say me, right? Or no work or something like that. And I mark it as busy and all of the time slots for Friday on Calendly disappear. Nobody can schedule calls that day. So I can't be forced into doing anything on a day where I don't want to do something.
I love this. Now, this is also a web application, right?
It is.
So the only thing that we've talked about that would be available to iOS users only is Way of Life.
Way of Life, Gmail, Google Calendar is on iOS.
But they're web applications too, essentially, is what I mean.
Yes, yes, yes. Asana is a good one that we haven't talked about. And I have another 30 minutes if you have time.
Yeah, let's talk about some of your other tools. You know, a lot of people, I've seen Calendly before, I've scheduled with you on that before and a few others. But it's only really recently that I've started to understand the value of that. And after today, I think it's going to be implemented.
So here's the ones that I think we should really get to because they're kind of like secret weapons.
Okay.
So Asana is a secret weapon. Intercom is just, now this only applies to people who are running businesses. Intercom does. Asana can be used for anybody. So Asana, Intercom, MindMeister, and CoSchedule. We already talked about Hootsuite. And we talked about Calendly. So those, MindMeister, Intercom, Asana would be the last three like secret weapons.
Let's start with Asana.
Okay. So Asana is a project management app. I've used many, many different ones. Asana, I keep coming back to Asana. I like it the best. It works the best. So you can have a team on Asana or you can do it by yourself, whatever. And you put in basically any task that you need to do. You can group them into projects. So if there's tasks related to specific projects, you just create a project and then the tasks live under that. Tasks can have subtasks. So you can go in and make an entire list under another list item. And what I love is that since I use it for a team, I can assign different tasks to certain people and they'll get an email saying, hey, you have a new task and it's due by X date. And then they have to go in and check it off when it's done. And that sends me an email. Hey, Kim has completed your task. And it tells you what task it was. And it keeps everybody on track. And it also is a great place for, so if I have an idea in Evernote, but it's going to take 3 weeks to accomplish, then it gets moved from Evernote to Asana. And then in Asana, all of the relevant behaviors that need to be done to accomplish that task get broken out into the list. And anything that needs to get assigned to somebody else would then get assigned to somebody else. And then we just work through the Asana project until it's done.
What is the interface like? Does it map these things or does it look like Evernote?
It's pretty and it's easy, but it is a little overwhelming at first, I think. And what it is it's a task list that would look like any other task list generally. The problem is when you click on a task item, another like drawer will slide out to the right hand side, and that's where you're going to get like a ton of options for mm-hmm. what to do with this thing, and that can get a little overwhelming. That's where you assign things to people, you can attach documents, you can have conversations about a specific task item. So if somebody doesn't understand something, they're not shooting you emails about it or trying to call you on the phone. They're just putting comments in on that task item saying, "Hey, I don't get this. What do I need to do?" You can clarify task items. So instead of just having the item itself, when they click on it, you can have a full description and, like I said, subtasks for how to accomplish that thing. So that's where it gets a little bit more than your regular system would. But once you click on things, they disappear. So that's nice. You don't see them again. You can go see what's been completed, but it's not by default. Things just disappear and you're left with what needs to be done next.
I got you. Yeah.
It's a pretty easy interface.
Yeah, I'm looking at screenshots of it right now. It does have certainly a pleasant interface. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it would be really helpful. I mean, Evernote has options for sharing and collaborating in a live way. But yeah, I think if you're working with several people on a project, I could see the benefits of this. Does it cost money?
No.
Really?
No.
How about
totally
that?
Free. And it has an iOS app, so I can keep track of projects on my phone. I can add tasks on my phone. I can get notifications of things. So I like being able to do things in multiple locations.
Interesting. All right. So how about Intercom?
So Intercom is a brand new startup company. I think they came out in 2015, maybe early 2015 or late 2014. I can't remember. They have completely taken over. They're kind of an automation plus support system. So IU and a sales system for chat. So if somebody goes to the Total Body Reboot page, or actually our academy at all, they're going to see a little floating message icon in the bottom right-hand corner. They click on that, and they can type a message. And it will come to me or Kim live, and we can type right back to them. So they can ask us questions about the program or the academy or whatever, and we can talk to them. And it'll store them as a lead in the system and help us keep track of all these people who came, who wanted more information, things like that. When people are logged in, it switches from a little message box to a question mark, and that's like a support icon. So we use that for our entire support system. People go in, they can type long things, they can attach documents to it, and it sends us the messages in a dashboard, keeps everybody really organized. Kim can assign people to me, I can assign people to her for whatever needs to happen. And that's how we really streamline. Since we implemented Intercom, what most people do is they have a support email, right? And they may even have like an email desk system that kind of keeps track of tickets, and they can mark tickets as completed or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's all email based, and there's emails going back and forth, and it's a mess and a nightmare. Intercom has relieved us of all of that. So we have one place where all support and sales messages kind of get handled. And it's really streamlined everything. And that's Kim's like domain. Like, she's in charge of everything that happens at Intercom. All I have to do is log in once a day and say, is there any notes for me on stuff? Has anybody been assigned to me? If not, I close it and I move on with my day. But that's where everybody from the academy is handled.
Yeah, that's a major simplification.
Yeah. And so there's an automated side to this where Intercom can display messages to people based on certain behaviors. If somebody has not logged in to our academy in 6 months, it can send a message from me that says, hey, we haven't seen you around in a while. How are things going? You know, reach out. Let me know if you need anything. So I'm not constantly having to go in and run a report for, okay, who hasn't logged in the last 6 months? Let me send all these people a message. It's all automated. There's a welcome message every time they enter a new stage. Hey, welcome to stage two. That's all driven by Intercom. It allows people to write back to us, answer questions. I also love the fact that you can program the message to just have a thumbs up, thumbs down. So if you just want to notify somebody of something and you want to limit their feedback to saying, I like that or don't like that, they can't message you back. They can just click thumbs up or thumbs down. And it also has a survey type feature. So you can create a survey and you can send that to only people who are logged in, or you can email it out to people. The ability of the software is pretty much endless, and it's amazing.
Interesting. So are there other secret weapons?
The other one is there's two more, MindMeister. And this would be for everybody, not for just business people, but it's amazing for business. So MindMeister is a mind mapping tool. And what I found is that when you are thinking about a project and all the stuff that needs to happen, and this is especially this, I use it primarily for course development or product development, where I'm a visual learner,
right?
And I'm a visual organizer. I like to be able to see things. Getting stuff out of your head, right? And being able to show other people. So I have Kim and I've got to show her, you know, what's going on with this project. What does it look like from a 20,000 foot view? That's what a mind map is for.
Absolutely. So yeah, we're speaking the same language there. Visual.
Yeah. Yep. So you go in, you create your mind map, you say, all right, this course is going to have A, B, C, D, E module or stage. And then under that, it's going to have to be this and this and this. And then this leads to that. So you create a mind map. And when you're done with it, you know exactly what needs to be worked on. You can start to create your task list in Asana. And you have that 20,000 foot view of what you want to create right there in front of you on the screen.
I'm looking at this. This is beautiful.
Yeah, MindMeister. And again, this is one of those apps where I've tried probably half a dozen of them, and I keep coming back to MindMeister. It's so easy. It's beautiful. You can change how it looks. There's like a few different presets. You can change the alignment of the mind map, so it doesn't have to be a top down. It doesn't have to be left or right aligned. It gives you a ton of options, and you can color code labels. You can add icons to things. It's really cool.
All right. Did you ever play around with the brain?
I didn't. No.
No. The problem with the brain is you can make connections between things, like these pathways, but I never figured out a way, and I could be wrong, to actually label the significance of the pathway between two things. So, first of all, is that clear what I mean?
Yes.
All right. Is there a way to do that in MindMeister?
I don't think so, other than you could create your own like color system for maybe super important sub items get this color, or, you know, less important things get this color. I don't know. But no, I don't think you can label the actual pathway.
I'm just curious. What do you think the value is of the mind map over just a list that could be made clear with color coding and using bold and underlining? Why is this superior in your mind?
Because again, it's a visual representation, and things don't have to be linear, where in a list, they would have to be pretty linear.
Indeed, yeah.
So for example, when I was mind mapping Total Body Reboot, I had the curriculum. So there's different parts to this program. Like there's a curriculum, all that was branched out to the right. And then there's things that didn't involve the curriculum, like coaching, right? Or these other guides. Well, I branched those things out to the left because they don't have anything to do with the curriculum. So, and again, you can keep all this stuff in separate places in a mind map. And when you look at it instantly, you can see, all right, the stuff on the right all goes together. The stuff on the left goes together. There's main branches. And it's just much easier also than a list. And it's more fun to create because you're just like drawing on a screen.
Absolutely. Okay. I was curious because I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and I want to use this. I see the value in this, but I'm trying to determine for myself if the payoff is worth the time investment, first in learning to use the software efficiently, and then in the actual creation of mind maps. I used to write them by hand on giant dry erase boards.
Yeah.
And I found like that process was very, very helpful for me. It's actually how I planned most of the early shows, especially if it was a complex topic on some historical subject. So I had walls of dry erase, and I don't know if you heard in a recent show, I talked about these rollout dry erase surfaces.
No, I haven't heard that.
So I just ordered a bunch of them where I'm going to try to set aside two studio walls, and it just comes like posters, but it's dry erase material. It's, you know, it's portable. I don't think I'll bring them to the grocery store with me, but, you know, if I move from one place to another, it's handy. So I like being able to write, but I do also like the idea of integration, you know? I mean, I like to have a link in Evernote to something else, right? So I can't do that with a handwritten journal. I can't do that with a wall-sized dry erase board. I can do snapshots of that stuff, but it's not exactly the same. So this has come up a lot, or at least a couple of times this month, the idea of mind mapping. I was a pretty committed handwritten manual mind mapper at one point, and I've gotten away from it. It is enjoyable, and I'm just kind of weighing the pros and cons of returning to it. So that's why I asked.
Well, yeah, with MindMeister, there's a very low learning curve. So I think you're going to be like off to the races almost immediately with it.
Yep.
There's just maybe like three or four things you have to know when you get started, and you figure them out pretty quickly. It's again, a really simple, beautiful layout. The other thing I've used it for is, so with Kim, for example, when somebody comes into a brand like Rebooted Body, how do they know all of the inner workings, right? Like, how do they know why blog articles are important, why podcast things are important? How do they know how we get traffic and how do we get new clients? I did a mind map for that where I put, all right, Rebooted Body, and then over here I put social media. Here's the channels that we focus on: Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest. That's it. Maybe a little Instagram. Then down here I put content development. We have an article branch. We have a podcast branch. We have a free guide branch. Over here I put email automation. There's a welcome automation. There's a total body reboot automation. There's this, there's that, there's this. And I create this whole map of how total body reboot works. And I sit down with Kim and I can just say, and actually we just screen share because she doesn't live in Atlanta. So I just screen share with her and walk through this whole mind map with her. And she can see visually how all of this stuff fits together and what the purpose of every area is so that she can help out better and understand things better. So that's another use that I made.
Well, yeah. So part of the appeal for me is like using them to plan content, right? But then they also can be turned around because they can be very visually appealing more than show notes, right? They can actually be turned around and made into teaching tools, essentially a kind of infographic that can work as, you know, if I want to convert a audio podcast into a YouTube video, suddenly I have something for people to look at during that video, and they can also take the place of linear show notes. Mm-hmm. So that's another reason why I'm starting to think about this very, very seriously. I think there's great value in this.
Absolutely. Yep. And MindMeister lets you create different projects too, just like Asana does. So you can keep everything organized. All your mind maps for a certain project can be organized in a folder for that project. So there's not just a list of mind maps in your dashboard.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Pretty good.
All right. So at this point, I have one question left for everybody.
Yes.
You tell your story. I think in the first conversation we had, and I know this is part of Rebooted Body as well, you weren't always doing so well. Mm-hmm. Health-wise, organization-wise, clarity of vision-wise, if you could take what you know today and package up one really, really valuable message for yourself 10 years ago, 15 years ago, or just one takeaway for my audience based on what you've learned that has gotten you to where you are now, what would that thing be?
The biggest shift by far, and I think that makes this question really easy to answer, is, and this is what I would have told myself, maybe not 10 years ago, but definitely 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. I would have said, this job that you are doing day in and day out is sucking the life out of you. It's limiting you. Lose it. Like, get the fuck out now. And I actually had those thoughts 7 years ago. But I kept going to that job day after day, and it kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And all I kept telling myself was, there's a little bit of success right around the corner. You know, my boss is going to change. He's not going to be an asshole anymore. Our company's going to grow. I'll be able to get paid more. And even I would ignore the fact that every time it did grow and every time I made it grow, he took the money. I didn't get any extra. Like, I got, you know, pieces here and there, right? And I got a lot of good explanations that I bought into. But I kept telling myself also, if I leave, what am I going to do? Like, I have a wife. We're planning on having kids. I can't leave this job. There's too much security in it, right? And I can pay my bills, but setting aside the fact that I just wasn't happy. So I would have told my, and there's, I think there's so many people in this position. The advice is very simple. Get the fuck out. Go do something else. Go do something that you're really passionate about, that you have fun with, that doesn't feel like work. Because I, you know, listening to your podcast on work ethic, right? The Puritan work ethic, it's real. And a lot of people just slave away. And the biggest shift for me came when I started working only on projects that I was really passionate about, and not being tied to that physical location, not being tied to a physical schedule where somebody expected me to be somewhere for a certain amount of hours every single day, whether I wanted to be there or not, just to collect their paycheck. Getting away from all that was the number one shift that changed everything. It changed my happiness. It changed my outlook. It changed my ability to be consistent with the health habits that I wanted to do, and so on and so forth. That if I was still in that job, I would still be in a horrible place.
So what was the job, if I may ask, and how did you leave it? Like, what needed to be, because that realization is obviously very important, and it's a first step, but there needs to be, I think, before you take it, something in front of you that doesn't look like quicksand, you know?
Yes, right. Well, okay, so Dave Ramsey says don't step off the dock unless there's a boat there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, yes, you do have to start working. There is going to be a transition period where you have to start working on something or lining things up, lining up opportunities on the side before you actually give the two-week notice,
right?
The job that I was doing, I was the co-owner of a martial arts studio. And I think on our very first podcast, I went through that story. But that's where Rebooted Body was kind of born, where I finally got to a point where I said, all right, I've got to do something else. Prior to that, I started taking my life in the different direction health-wise. And again, just kind of reiterating the story, parents who are bringing their kids saw me making those changes, said, hey, how are you doing that? I started helping them. They started getting good results. And I was, a light bulb went off, like, hey, this is fun watching these people make these great changes in their life. And it's reflecting in their body, their health, their energy levels, all this. I think I've got something there. And I started building that on the side. And after about 6 months, 8 months, I felt that I was in a place where I wasn't comfortable leaving, but the fear was starting to go away.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm done. If I'm going to pull the plug, it's now, and I'm going to make this thing work. I'm going to make this thing happen. So I did spend 6 to 8 months on the side. Like I said, coming home at 9 p.m. at night, working to 1 a.m., 2 a.m. in the morning, and then going to bed, getting up, doing it again the next day. You know, it required that in the beginning, but it was a great investment.
Absolutely. So it also seems like your story has some of the advice that Jake DeSillis gave my audience a while back, years ago. He said, if you're a teenager, if you're young, this is the time to really experiment with being an entrepreneur, because you're in a situation where you can fail, you know. So it sounds like for so long you tried things, and basically through that you were able to minimize that fear of failure by experiencing it, right? So I thought that was great advice for young people, like, hey, you might even live at home, how terrific, you know, try things, right, and fail. So thank you so much, Kevin. It's such a terrific story, and I really appreciate you revealing your secret weapons today.
Yeah,
I think we might have a better title. I think secret weapons should be in the title.
There you go.
But
I did want to say too that I think a lot of people, when they think about leaving a job and starting a business, if they watch like television shows, they're going to see like business television shows. They're going to see a lot of conventional businesses like, oh, I got to open a storefront and have a product or products, and I got to build a team, and I got to hire people, do this and do that. And there's all these regulations and insurance and blah, all that stuff. I can absolutely see why they want nothing to do with that. There is, and this has only been really since the internet has gotten to where it is now, I would say in the last like 8 to 10 years, the movement of lifestyle entrepreneurship, where, and this is where my mindset shifted. And I want to tell people this because it's super important to let them know that there is a different avenue than building a traditional business. Mm-hmm. So the goal that I had, remember in the very beginning when I was like 18, 20, I was like, I want to be a multimillionaire business owner in a conventional business and, you know, build an enterprise, blah, 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 all that stuff. And once I started actually doing work in the marketplace, I was like, holy shit, like to do that would require me to be working 12 hours a day all the time, taking massive risks, not spending any time with my family. And I didn't want anything to do with that anymore. And I completely shifted to this lifestyle entrepreneurship route, which is building a business and a brand that sustains you and whoever else you want to employ, maybe keeping it very small, 2-3 people, right? Mm-hmm. In a very comfortable lifestyle without dealing with all the other stuff in traditional business. And if you're doing stuff online, which I believe that every single person has a skill or a hobby or something that they're great at that others could benefit from, or knowledge, whatever, that could be transitioned to the internet. The internet has extremely low overhead. So I'm not telling people to take out an $80,000 loan and go open a retail store selling, you know, whatever trinkets they want to. Like, that's not the way to go. That's probably going to end in absolute disaster.
Right.
The internet and a lifestyle-oriented business allows you to build stuff on the side, not a lot of outlay in the beginning, not a lot of overhead, not a lot of risk, and you can continue to build and grow from the ground up without taking massive risks that are required in other businesses. So I talked about VeroPure.com, right? Putting a physical product out into the world. Massive, massive risks if I wanted to go forward with that. And I'm looking at that like, that does not align at all with my principles. I'm not going to outlay $50,000, $60,000 for this, especially something I'm not even interested in anymore. That's what people think business is, like needing to do that to be successful. And you don't. You can just build something small that sustains you and maybe a couple other people that you have fun with and that allows you flexibility to do all this other stuff that you want to do. So don't think that business is some massive thing that's going to take gobs of your time and require all of these risks along the way.
Yeah.
So it's not true.
Absolutely.
And that's what you do, right, Brett? That's what you do.
Indeed. And the risks are beyond financial. You know, like there was a time in my life where I was really, really passionate about my job, but my job only existed in Bennington, Vermont, one of the shittiest places in the entire country. Mm. I guarantee it. Definitely in the Northeast. There were demands, time demands. I ran a school. Like a campus of a larger school. And I was trying to basically transform the whole environment, the whole culture of this campus that I ran. I was investing 50 hours a week, 60 hours a week. Teaching is a 30-hour a week job. Mm-hmm. You know, I had it by later in my career, I had it down to 28 hours a week if I put in the time in August to make that happen all year long. And what I realized, you know, this was more than 10 years ago, is that I can take something that I love, and this is to speak to what you said about risk. It's beyond financial risks. I can take something that I love, and I can convert it into something that I resent because it throws my life out of balance. It throws my health out of balance because of the time and energy that it takes, and mm-hmm. it also pins me to a horribly shitty location,
yep.
right? That opportunity to run a school campus at the age of 24 didn't exist anywhere else. You know, I had to put in 3 years in the town I went to college in this school to work to that place to have that job, or 2 years to have that job. And I couldn't have just moved to Boston and, or some any place more desirable and had that opportunity. So the risk was converting something that I wanted to do into something that I dreaded because of what was imposed on me, you know, in order right. to do it. And I didn't want to have that situation again. And it took a long time to get to here, which is like a rest stop on where I want to go. But I say that because I'm very impressed with what you do, with what you know, with the value that you add through your work. And I really appreciate what you shared here today. It was very helpful for me, and I'm sure thousands of others as well.
Well, yeah, thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please help us out by leaving a positive review on iTunes. If you were angered by the show, please help us out by leaving negative reviews everywhere. If you think this is an important message for students, for parents, or for the future of intellectual freedom, please consider supporting us. SchoolSucksProject.com/AV. For $6 a month, you'll get access to hundreds of additional hours of content while helping us grow and spread this message further.